Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Miriam's Song by Jill Eileen Smith. Narrated by Emma Fay. Part 1. Then a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. "Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous, and if war breaks out, will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country." So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor, and they built Pithom and Ramses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites, and worked them ruthlessly. Exodus chapter 1, verses 8 through 13, New International Version. Prologue, 1526 BC. Hatshepsut peeked through a slit in a curtain that allowed her to watch her father in his audience chamber and listen to his magicians and advisors speak to him. She had escaped her servants and tutors, as she often did, to watch Pharaoh Thutmose I in his jeweled clothes, his crook and flail crossed before him, and the sign of the cobra on his head. One day, she would wear that crown, she promised herself. It was a big dream for a young girl, but she had never wanted anything more. It was all in fun, she told her mother when she scolded Hatshepsut for her daydreams. But in her heart, Hatshepsut knew better. She would wear her father's crown, and since she was the only child of his first wife, she knew, even in her 7 years on earth, that she held a highly favored position. She let the curtain fall back into place lest she be seen, but sat quietly, straining to hear the men.
"My lord," one said, "the Hebrews only grow stronger despite the added work we give them. They breed like cattle even when we beat them with whips and rods. What can we do?"
Silence followed the desperate question. She peered again through the slit and held her breath. If she were caught here, her father would ban her from the audience chamber. But she had to know. What did her father plan to do with the Hebrews?
"You have sent them to the fields and forced them to make their own mortar to go with the bricks?" "Yes, my lord. We have upped their quotas and put them in rocky fields and forced them to make the land smooth. Nothing works."
Hatshepsut released her breath as quietly as she could. They had to be cruel to people who could oppress them. That's what her father had said many times. She watched him stroke the fake beard he wore on his normally smooth chin. His eyes were slits, painted with coal, and they narrowed even more now.
"Then we will have to resort to harsher means," he said. "Call to me the Hebrew midwives."
Hatshepsut scrunched her brow, mimicking the surprised looks on the faces of her father's men. What were midwives, and how could they help against so fierce a people as the Hebrews?
"Yes, my king,"
two or three men said at once. They retreated backwards from the pharaoh's presence, and Hatshepsut leaned on her heels and placed both hands around her knees. Her father would not wait long for these midwives to appear before him. No one resisted a summons from the pharaoh. So she would wait and learn. She wished she could ask her mother or servants what a midwife was, or why her father wanted to speak to them. But she would figure it out if she could just sit here quietly and not be discovered. Her stomach growled, and she almost rose to hurry to the palace cooking rooms to coax the cooks for a treat, but she didn't want to miss whatever happened next. An hour passed, and Hatshepsut grew tired in her cramped position, but still she waited. At last, the big door swung open, and two young women slowly walked the length of the audience chamber. They bowed before Pharaoh, their faces to the ground. Hatshepsut studied them. They wore woolen robes over linen or woolen tunics, with no ornaments in their hair or jewelry on their arms. They were slaves like the rest of the Hebrews. Suddenly, Hatshepsut didn't see them as people to fear. Why, they were no different from her servants, only poorer. As they lifted their heads at her father's order, she saw that they wore no makeup to enhance their plain features.
"Tell me your names," Pharaoh barked, making her jump.
The women still knelt, eyes looking again at the floor.
"Sifra and Pua,"
one said, her voice shaking. They were obviously afraid of her father, and she felt sorry that the women had been forced to come here at all. Why did her father want them?
"You are the heads of the Hebrew midwives?"
Pharaoh's voice carried unquestioned authority.
"Yes, my lord."
"Look up," he said. "I want to see your faces when I tell you this."
They both lifted their heads, and Hatshepsut read fear in their eyes.
"When you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see that the baby is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, let her live."
Her father's words echoed in the hall, and a heavy silence followed. A shiver rushed down Hatshepsut's spine. A midwife must be a person who helped deliver babies.
"If you see that the child is a boy before the mother completely delivers it, kill the child before it sees the light of day," he added. "Now go, see that you do not disobey my orders."
The two women backed from the Pharaoh's chambers without a word, not even an acknowledgement that they would do as he said. Shock filled their faces, and Hatshepsut felt the same. Her father wanted to kill the Hebrew babies because the Hebrews were becoming too strong for him. Even a child could understand that. But why not just let the Hebrews move away? Send them out of Egypt and ban them from coming back. She saw the tiniest hint of movement in her father's quiet sigh. His shoulders slumped. Her father was afraid. Was it true, as her mother had hinted when she didn't know Hatshepsut heard? Was the Pharaoh of Egypt, the grandest nation on earth, weak? 1.
"Oh!"
A woman's cry woke Miriam with a start. She pulled the light blanket from her shoulders and tossed it aside. The sky was still dark. Had she been dreaming?
"Ima?"
she called out, leaning on an elbow and rubbing her eyes.
"Go back to sleep, Miriam. Marta's baby will be here soon."
"Please, dear God, let Hava's Ima have a girl."
Miriam pulled the covers over herself again as she prayed for her best friend's mother. She squeezed her eyes tight, trying to block out the fear. Everyone knew that a baby boy would be sacrificed to the river god.
"A girl, oh God, please let it be a girl."
When Miriam awoke later to the croo-de-do of a laughing dove, she strained to listen for Marta's cries. Instead, she heard the soft whimper of a baby. Miriam jumped out of bed and hurried to where her mother stood by the curtained window and watched the rising sun color the sky in pink pre-dawn light. She touched her mother's round stomach with one hand. Her father came and stood behind them, stiff and silent, his robe warm against her back.
"The head taskmaster knew Marta was in labor, poor girl,"
Ima said, her voice soft and sad.
"It was a boy?"
Miriam whispered against her mother's side and felt her father's arm touch her shoulder. She glanced back at him and caught the tears flowing down Ima's cheeks. Abba nodded. Ima turned from the window and pulled Miriam to sit beside her on a low stool.
"They will come for him, won't they?"
Miriam's throat hurt as she voiced the words.
"We can pray that they won't, but no boys have survived since Sifra and Pua refused to obey the Pharaoh's orders."
Tears stung Miriam's eyes, and she swiped at them with one hand.
"Can I go to Hava?"
Abba came and knelt at her side. Her Her little brother Aaron rose from his cot, pulling his blanket with him.
Hungry, he said, as though nothing awful had just happened. I prayed, Abba. Why did God give them a boy instead of a girl?
She was crying now, though even at 5 years old she knew crying wouldn't change anything. Her gaze turned from her father to her mother, who would give birth to another baby soon.
We don't know the ways of our God, my daughter.
He shook his head. The sound of horses' hooves pounded the pavement outside of their little hut, shaking the earth and the walls along with it. They all stilled, even Aaron, though he climbed onto Ima's lap.
We will speak of this later,
Abba whispered. Miriam crept from the table to peek through the curtain again. Bare-chested soldiers dressed in red and white skirts stood beside their captain, who hopped off his horse and pounded on Hava's door with his fist. The door creaked open. Miriam heard shouts, then a baby's wail.
Don't take my baby,
Hava's Ima screamed. But the soldiers marched out of the house, carrying the newborn boy by his legs, and mounted their horses. Miriam watched Hava and her father run after them, leaving her mother sobbing in the house. When the soldiers had disappeared from view, Ima slipped quietly from the house to comfort Hava's mother.
Can I go with you, Ima?
Miriam stood at the door, longing to run after her friend, but her father, who now held Aaron in his arms, pulled her back. She turned slowly to face him.
You must protect your Ima now, Miriam. Only God can comfort Hava's family, and we must pray that he does the same for us.
Miriam looked at him, her eyes widening.
What if Ima has a boy?
Abba held a finger to his lips.
Do not speak of it, child. You must keep our secret. Not even the taskmasters know of your Ima's condition. And when the baby comes...
He paused, his gaze traveling toward the thatched ceiling.
When that day comes, we must trust our God.
Several weeks later, Miriam awoke to the soft mewling of a newborn. She threw off her blanket and padded quickly across the floor to her mother's side.
What is it, Ima?
She whispered, bending close. Her mother opened the blanket to show her. Miriam sighed.
He's beautiful.
She put a shaky hand to her chest.
But what about the soldiers? The river god?
There is no river god, Miriam. There is only one god, and he alone can keep your brother safe.
Ima's voice was soft, barely above a whisper.
We will keep him quiet, and we will tell no one of his birth, not even Hava.
She looked at Miriam with sternness in her gaze.
Do you understand, Miriam?
A tear slipped down her cheek, but she nodded.
I won't tell anyone.
She reached one hand to touch her baby brother's creamy, soft skin. He had a head of thick black hair, and his eyes were wide with wonder. His mouth opened and closed, and he sucked on Miriam's finger as though he thought it was food. Miriam coughed, forcing back the urge to laugh. A moment later, she remembered Hava's brother.
Why does the king take the boy baby, Zima?
The king is afraid of us, my daughter. He throws our boys into the river because he thinks we will grow too powerful and rise up against him.
Ima placed the baby's mouth to her breast, leaned against the cot, and closed her eyes. What would she do with him when she was expected to work in the fields?
I could take your place in the fields today,
Miriam offered, wishing she were bigger so she could truly help. Ima opened her eyes and smiled. She shook her head.
No, my sweet girl. You will come with me as you always do. I will feed your brother, and then we will go.
But you just gave birth.
Though Miriam was young, she knew that women needed time to heal after birthing a baby.
I worked the fields after Aaron's birth. I will do the same now.
She stood with the sleeping baby in her arms. She placed him in the large lunch basket she always carried and covered him with a blanket, then placed bread and cheese on top.
Our God sees what the king is doing to us, Miriam. He will not forget his people forever. Someday he will send a deliverer, and no river god or any other god will stop him.
8 days later, Miriam's father planned to circumcise the new baby after a long day of working on one of Pharaoh's cities. He did not call the elders to join him, but took the family to the river, where the sound of lapping water might drown out the baby's cries. Miriam clasped Aaron's hand as they knelt beside their mother. Their father quickly cut off the baby's foreskin along the banks of the Nile.
"What shall we name him?"
he asked Ima. She shook her head.
"I cannot name him yet. He will be our Tikva, our hope. When he is old enough to go unnoticed, then we will name him."
Miriam stared at her baby brother, her mouth agape that he had not cried. Her mother had been quick to cover and soothe him and put him to her breast. Miriam let out a relieved breath as she watched her mother tuck the baby into her robe, blocking all view of him. They stood slowly and moved back to their hut by the light of the moon. When they were settled inside, Miriam led Aaron to his pallet and told him a story while her parents sat at a small table, her mother still nursing the baby.
"He is an unusual boy,"
her father said softly.
"There is something about him."
"Do you see it too?"
Her mother's voice held awe.
"I sensed it even before his birth. This child has a future ahead of him. God has surely set him aside for something. Perhaps he is the answer to all of our prayers."
Miriam listened to her father's agreement and their talk of a deliverer. What would it be like to live in a place other than Egypt? To be free of taskmasters and guards who threw boy babies into the river? Could her brother be that person? She tucked Aaron into bed and touched his soft hair. What would it be like to be considered special by God? She had thought about him ever since her parents began to teach her of him when she was no bigger than Aaron. What was God even like? She pondered the thought as she lay down on her own pallet beside Aaron's. Maybe someday she would know. For now, she was simply glad that her baby brother was safe for one more day. 2 weeks later, Miriam held Aaron's hand again as they walked beside their mother toward the fields, where she worked digging up stones and carrying them to the edge of the field. The work was hard, the day long, and Miriam did all she could to lift the stones and watch Aaron at the same time. She couldn't let her mother be distracted when she was trying to keep their tikva quiet. As the sun rose higher in the sky and the people groaned beneath the heat of the day, the sharp sound of a whip cracking caused everyone to jump. An old man screamed, and Miriam whirled around. 3 rows from where her mother worked, a taskmaster stood beating a weeping man who could not lift the heavy boulder at his feet. Welts appeared on his bare back, and with every scream, the taskmaster shouted,
"Get up, you lazy slave! Pick up your load and do your part, or I will feed your body to the crocodiles."
Miriam grabbed Aaron's hand and ran to stand behind her mother. She put her hands over Aaron's ears and hid them both against the length of her mother's skirts. But she couldn't block the man's screams from her own ears, and she feared the baby would hear and begin to cry himself.
"Please, God, make it stop and keep our baby quiet."
The whipping ended as the man attempted to lift the boulder, but the weight was too heavy. It fell on his foot, crushing it. His screams ended when the taskmaster ran him through with a sword. Miriam could not stop her silent tears, but she managed to hush Aaron's soft weeping. She pointed toward home.
"We will leave soon," she whispered.
Surprisingly, the baby did not make a sound. He was not in the basket where her mother usually tucked him,
but strapped to her body beneath her clothes, nursing. Miriam glanced at her mother, who looked worn. Neither of them could keep the horror from their eyes.
"Keep working," Ima whispered. "All is well. We will talk when we are home."
Miriam nodded and led Aaron back to the small section they were trying to clear. Aaron could carry barely more than the size of a small rock, but Miriam managed some twice as big. The Egyptians had picked this rocky field to make life harder for the women and the older people, and now she saw that they would not even care that the work was too much for them. Egyptians were cruel. Miriam had known that from what happened with Hava's baby brother, but now she felt the fear creep up her spine. They were not safe here or anywhere in this awful land. No one was safe. How long until their baby was discovered and her parents suffered for hiding him? What would happen to her and Aaron then? Hatshepsut walked through the halls of her father's palace, trailed by her serving girls. She wanted to escape to the river, but the commotion at the front of the audience chamber made her turn. She motioned to her maids.
"Come," she said.
Even at her young age, she had learned quickly to command those older than she was. She led the girls to climb the steps to an antechamber that overlooked the audience hall. No need to give up her hiding place behind the curtain. Besides, she was allowed to watch when the chamber was open to people besides her father's advisors. And the sight of the two Hebrew midwives approaching the pharaoh now made her sit tall and lean closer to the railing to better hear them. Pharaoh's narrow eyes turned to slits, his gaze as hard as his tone.
"Why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live?"
Hatshepsut's eyes grew wide. Her father had known of these women's disobedience for months and had sent his soldiers to toss the babies into the river. She had heard him from her hiding place when he was first given the news.
"My lord,"
one of his advisors had said,
"it is said that the Hebrew midwives you sent for have not done as you asked. Hebrew boys are allowed to live, and they are coming faster than they were before."
Her father said words she did not often hear him speak, and they made her curl tighter into herself and cover her ears against his raised voice.
"Then we will kill them," her father said. "Have the taskmasters keep watch over the pregnant women. When their time comes to give birth, watch their houses and send soldiers to check. If it is a boy, toss it to the crocodiles."
The memory of that awful day came back to her now. How could her father order his men to kill innocent babies? Her thoughts turned back to the midwives as one of them spoke.
"Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women, my lord. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwives arrive."
Hatshepsut looked from the women to her father. He remained silent. Did he believe them? Would he have them killed too? She held her breath and squeezed her eyes shut.
"No, please don't kill them too."
They could be telling the truth. But when she looked again at the women, she wondered. She had never seen a baby born, or even a Hebrew woman except these two midwives. What did she know of what they said? What did her father know? Men did not attend the birthing of Egyptian babies.
"You have defied my order,"
her father said, his tone menacing.
"So I will repeat it again. If you do happen to get there in time to help these women give birth, which it seems you should, why else would they need a midwife? You will obey me, or I will take away your privileged place and put you under hard labor like your fellow Hebrews."
Hatshepsut let out a long-held breath. The midwives bowed and backed from the king's presence. Hatshepsut watched them go and felt a deep sense of relief that her father had not punished them. It was not like him to give them a second chance. He was not known for kindness or leniency, and yet he had allowed them to leave unharmed. Hatshepsut moved down the steps to head toward her rooms. Something was not quite right, but she didn't know what.
Mostly she was thankful that the women would be spared. If only her father were as kind to the baby boys.
3. Miriam stood at the table where her mother sat working at her basket weaving, late as it was. She saw Ima's slumped shoulders and her tired eyes, but she continued to weave the papyrus reeds into the shape of an oblong basket, in and out, over and through.
"Why are you making this, Ima? You should sleep. Please let me help you."
Though Miriam had never made a basket, she knew she could do it. Following Ima's example didn't look hard. Her mother shook her head, her smile worn, the lines around her mouth deeper than they usually were.
"We have to hurry, Miriam. It is for your brother."
Miriam gave her a curious look.
"But why? No one has found him yet. Surely God will keep him safe."
"That is my hope, little one. But our little Tikva grows bigger by the day. Soon I will no longer be able to hide him from the taskmasters. He will bulge under my skirt, and they will know. They are always looking for signs of women who are carrying a child. They will know."
"But..."
Miriam wanted to say that wouldn't God hide the truth from their eyes? Instead, she simply nodded.
"Can I help you?"
"You can stir the pitch I have waiting in the bowl over there."
Ima pointed to a wooden bowl on the floor, where a black tarry mass filled it to the top. Miriam did as she was told. She took a wooden stick and stirred, though it took both hands and all of her strength to make the sticky mixture move. Her father came and lifted the bowl.
"You did well. It is enough."
Though she had not even made a full circle in her stirring. Her father took the bowl to her mother and set it on the table, where the basket now stood finished. Miriam glanced at her brothers, both sleeping on pallets.
"Hand me that white stick, Miriam," her mother said.
Miriam hurried to get it. Her mother took the object and dipped it into the pitch. She coated the basket inside and out, then took another bowl filled with tar and did the same.
"It will dry overnight,"
Ima said as she set the little ark, for that was what it looked like, on the floor near her pallet.
"We will bury the bowls, for there is no time to clean them well."
She glanced at Abba. Bowls were scarce, and it would take time to make more. But it would be easier to make new ones than try to clean the old.
"We will manage," Abba said.
"Miriam, you must listen to me now."
Ima took Miriam's hand and guided her to her pallet near Aaron, farthest from the door.
"Tomorrow we will swaddle your brother and place him in the basket and put a papyrus covering over him so he can breathe. I will put the basket in the water near the bulrushes along the Nile, where the princess comes to bathe. I want you to stand near, out of sight, and watch to see what happens to him, to see whether God is going to answer our prayers."
Miriam stared at her mother for a long moment, trying to take in what she had just heard. Put their baby in the Nile? That's where the boy babies went to die. Would their baby be safe in the little ark? For how long? Would God protect him? Was there no other way? But she simply nodded.
"Yes, Ima, I will do as you say."
Her mother patted her hand.
"That's my good girl. If the princess finds him and she looks on him with favor, you must not be afraid. You must go to her and offer to bring a nurse for the baby. Then you will come and find me."
Miriam nodded again. Did her mother expect this to happen? What if the ark drifted away from the reeds and out into the Nile, away from the princess? But again, she did not voice her fears.
"I will, Ima."
Her mother smiled, but Miriam saw the sadness in her eyes. Her mother wanted to believe that this baby would bring them hope, wanted to believe that God would spare him. But she didn't know that for sure. No one did. Miriam thought on that long into the night. The next morning, Miriam's mother touched her shoulder before dawn had fully risen. She nodded toward the basket and the door. Abba and Aaron still slept, but soon Abba would have to leave, and Ima couldn't wait and leave Aaron alone. Miriam quickly pulled her small cloak over her shoulders and followed her mother in silence as they hurried.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?